Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of the Hyperspace Radio Podcast. With me as ever is my non-corporeal, but very present in a Zen sense, co-host Zblit, coming back recently from a vacation in the outer Aurora Borealis, where energy patterns like to frolic. You may have seen it. He says it's doing well up north, and he's eager to come back in and hang out. He wants to get a lot of things done, but I was telling him, this seems like a mellow kind of a podcast for a mellow kind of a day. We all have little ups and downs, but things are generally pretty all right in the intergalactic hyperdimensions that we call sort of reality. There's no galactic storms heading our way at this moment. Most of us are comfortably situated on our planets, enjoying our various atmospheres, perhaps having a good lunch, or having avoided becoming something else's good lunch. So, along those lines, I thought it might be interesting just to take a look at some of the things that are going well in the universe, what we have to be grateful for. For example, it's a beautiful day here on Earth, and there is a continued lack of gamma ray bombardment, which is causing a distinct lack of hulks. Hulks are tough to deal with. They're tough to clean. They're tough to manage. They generally require some sort of therapist at some point who may himself turn into a hulk just to understand his patients. What I'm saying is it's a complicated problem. And when you get into couples who are hulks, then you're really talking about a lot of outer space expansion into therapy rooms where they can really play safely and not destroy most of the planet with their tiffs. So that's a good thing. In a larger sense, outside this tiny domain of Earth that we're broadcasting from, our adorable, rustic, cozy little Earth, we can be thankful that dark matter remains invisible. I expect if and when dark matter is ever made visible, we're going to find out the universe is really dirty. It's going to be like several billion years of neglected kitchen sink. Also to be grateful for, there continues to be a lack of galactic overlords. They're still at their convention. And also, just in general, we have many things to be amused about and by. That's a good point, Zblit. There's art. There's a lot to talk about with art. What I kind of wonder is, what is art really? By that I mean, what is that guy Art I work with? What is up with him? Is he an alien or not? Well, Zblit, I don't know if art imitates life. He seems alive, but he's one of those guys who is just, they're not really there when you're talking to them. You know, they only part hear what you're saying, and then they just take it and they go on this tangent. And it's not even related to what you were talking about, which seems like it was pretty obvious. But they're just too within themselves, I guess. Oh, you meant the field art, not my coworker art. Well, I guess it seems obvious to you. Look, you're on my podcast. Simmer down. No, that should not be offensive to an energy pattern, okay? It's just a saying. All right. Okay, moving forward, we'll talk about art. We'll talk about the art. We'll talk about art. Okay. All right. So we have this field called art. Not like a force field or an energy field, I don't think, but a field of endeavor for conscious beings. we make things that don't really seem to have a practical value besides our amusement or our entertainment. And it seems like there's something else there, but it's hard to define too. But these are things which don't really have a survival value, it seems. Yet, from all we know, 100% of all intelligent or at least aware species that we know of have art. Maybe it helps us see ourselves. It also does seem that in making it, we make ourselves, we become aware of things. It is the purpose of some effort, and it's also the end result of some effort. But it works with our feelings too. It's something of a game even, perhaps like a game that hunters would play, except that we're hunting and gathering concepts and we're using our tool-making monkey minds to form things from them. The way carnivorous animals such as tigers will play hunting games as cubs. In any case, art in the field itself is beautiful. No matter whether the art that is made individually is beautiful, ugly, irrelevant, it's pretty close to who we are as human beings, and I guess who aliens are as aliens. So on that note, I'll be glad to have our story of the week received over hyperspace radio from an alternate dimension somewhere of six-dimensional space, of course. I mean, I'm sure you know that, but I figured I'd spell it out just in case. And now, if Ziblit doesn't have any other asides, okay, whether or not Ziblit has any other asides, to our main event for today, the short story, The First Art Show. The First Art Show by James Beach. Narrated by James Beach. 15,000 BC, Cave of the Moon Bear. It was a big day for Ergluck. He had been painting for a long time in darkness, barely lit by torches, deep in the spell of creativity. Now it was time to shake that off, be social, and show the tribe what he had done. It was, at last, time for his art opening. The painted bear skulls were arranged at the mouth of the cave, the tops holding small, long-burning torches. Many berries had been gathered and sent off to the winemaker. Fern leaves had been braided and laid along the path. It was the night of the first moon. Word was spread around their little valley, and even into the next. His good friend Flarg headed into the cave with a large hunk of roasted boar over his shoulder, good for people to pick at as they perused Ergluck's new works. Ordinarily, they might have cooked it in the cave, but Ergluck didn't want it to distract from his paintings. Flarg plunked it down on a waiting slab. "Hey, Ergluck, how's it going?" Ergluck grunted. "Weather looks good. Hope for a good turnout. Seen Ayla at all?" "That new girl from the far valley? I saw her around the fire earlier. Did you invite her?"
"Oh, I left a map drawn in antelope blood at her cave step. Well, maybe she got it after she was done gathering for the day. It's very last minute. No big deal if she can't make it."
She was the only person he really wanted to show up tonight.
"Where is everybody?" said Ergluck, changing the subject. "It's already after sunset."
"Plenty of people will come tonight, I'm sure." Flug turned back to his friend. "I see you brought your new club."
"Yes, just had it made. Gwargalog makes a good club. I promised to use him as a mighty hunter with an erect penis in my next series."
"Hey, you're wearing new fur, too. You look sharp as a tiger's tooth, my friend."
"Thanks, Hunt Brother."
"Ayla will appreciate all that you've done to impress her." Ergluck looked pained.
"What?"
asked Flarg.
Ergluck sighed. "I didn't do all this just to impress her. I want her to see things that I see. I want to show things that others haven't seen or thought about. I want her and everyone else to see these things that I have deep inside me that burn, like the sun must burn when it goes over the hills and hides in caves at night."
"The sun? What is that?"
Oh, that's what I call that orange ball that rises in the daytime and makes things warm. I think it hides in caves.
Whatever you say, Flarg said, patting his shoulder. Hey, who is that old man? He pointed towards the cave's entrance.
Oh, good. The winemaker's here.
Ergluck put down his club and walked outside to help the old man and his children drag a sled in. He noted with approval that the sled was piled high with filled wineskins, and many drinking horns were along the side.
Ah, Ergluck, I have a good batch of wine. This time I left them out in the rain, added a fresh zing.
You will make me a good painting for my cave, as we agreed?
Of course, and we will have many thirsty people tonight, so your fame as a winemaker will spread across the land.
Ergluck looked around for where the wines could be set up.
Perhaps, Ergluck began, pointing to a spot near the entrance. On the big rock over there, the old man said, pointing to a different location about halfway inside the cave.
Ergluck feared that spot might distract from his paintings and wanted a different place, but it was at that moment he noticed the spot of the old man's wine on his fresh bearskin tunic. He screamed and ran to the back of the cave where he hoped no one could see him and tried to polish it out. The stain didn't just stay, it spread. Did he have time to run back to his cave and change tunics? He looked to the entrance and his heart sank. People had started walking in. Sighing, he took a position near his favorite new pieces, holding his new club in front of the stain and trying to look casual. The first attendees were an elderly couple, possibly even as old as 30 winters. They seemed well-fed. They seemed to like his rendering of a mammoth hunt. Maybe he could get a commission to paint their cave. He was considering how to start up a conversation with them when he happened to glance over at the winemaker. The old man's younger helpers were now carrying small woven baskets of... Ergluck ran over.
What in the name of the bear god is that stuff?
Oh, this! One of the winemaker's children picked up a chunk of dripping white stuff that resembled bloated flesh.
That's the milk fungus! What?
Ergluck looked around. No one had heard them.
Why would you bring such things to an art show? And did you say milk?
Yes, yes, the young man said impatiently. Don't you know, down at the tip of the river valley, they've been keeping yaks in pens and drinking their milk?
Ugh.
I know. It seems weird at first. But they left some of it out and it turned solid and I tasted it and it's not bad.
Well, actually it is bad. That's the whole point. It went bad. I don't want it at my show.
You should try it, said the old man.
Get that stuff away from me.
Just try it. If you don't like it, the wine tonight is free. Here, as a matter of fact, have some with the wine. Against his better judgment, Ergluck took a bite and then a swig of wine. He was about to spit it out on the ground when he paused. The combination actually tasted quite good.
I told you, said the winemaker.
Something about the combination goes well with paintings also. The old man nodded towards the mouth of the cave. You will need every impressive thing that you have, now that he's here. Ergluck looked over and saw an older man approaching. He was about to ask who it was, when a hushed voice called out from the crowd,
The seer!
Ergluck jumped in shock.
The seer? Could it be? The seer coming to his show?
Fear and hope ran through him like bolts of lightning through the forest. The seer was a wise man known for his wisdom, which sometimes was harder for simpler people to understand at first, but which was always explained later, also by the seer. The man had known many winters and witnessed many different kinds of paintings and creations. His judgment could make Ergluck a famous painter, known throughout the land. It could also ruin his name forever, making him unfit for anything but decorating children's training spears. The seer had arrived with a younger woman in tow. Ergluck could not see her face. Perhaps this was one of his servants he called interns. Such was the wisdom of the seer. Ergluck's eyes grew wide and softly focused, as if in a waking dream.
If he likes my paintings, why, I might not even have to join the hunt anymore. I could make cave paintings full time.
Hey, what's so bad about hunting? His friend Flarg asked. Ergluck snapped back to the present.
Nothing. How do I look?
Same as before. Sharp, okay? Besides that wine stain. Say, is that Ayla?
Ergluck looked where his friend was pointing and cursed the sky. For the woman walking arm in arm with the seer was none other than Ayla herself.
It looks like, Flarg began.
They're on a date? Said Ergluck.
He leaned against the wall in dismay, resisting the urge to run and hide.
Don't take it so bad, said Flarg. He grabbed his friend by the shoulders. This is your big night. You can't help but get some commissions for caves. Your stuff looks great. And him even being here is a big thing. It puts you on the map.
What is a map?
It's a thing we use to track deer. It's not important. You're a big artist now. Don't let it get to you.
I guess so,
said Ergluck, from his voice clearly not guessing so.
But
my baby, Ergluck heard a voice call out and cringed. His parents had come.
Mom, not so loud, okay?
But my darling, we're so proud of you, his mother announced, embracing him like some kind of parental she-mammoth. Such an artist!
She tried to pinch his cheek. He managed to dodge her right hand, but she was too quick with her left and pinched his other cheek.
Mom, do you have to...
What? I'm not supposed to say hi to my little baby? We're so happy and proud for your big show. Isn't that right, honey?
She turned to Ergluck's father. His father gave a grunt, indicating that he was in fact aware the show existed.
Yes, yes, of course, said Ergluck, recovering. Have you seen the wine? There's some interesting new food that seems to go well with it. You might want to spend some time trying it out.
He directed his parents towards the winemaker's rock. The cave was filling up now. Ergluck stood next to what he considered his latest and most important series of cave paintings. He waited for people to come over and talk to him, or at least come near him, so he could hear what they really thought about the art. Many liked it, which made him feel quite good. He overheard a passing group of spear enthusiasts chatting lightly about the different paintings and their styles. How this series was from the Loose Eyes period, while those other paintings were the Blue Pigment period. Ergluck nodded. Yep, he'd had a concussion that nearly knocked his eye loose. Then he'd transitioned out of that period by finding some blue rock, while wandering dazed. Inspiration, really. Other people might as well not have been seeing the art at all, and were just talking about their day. An older berry gatherer compared Ergluck's piece on red deer to his own child's dirt scrapings. That was unfair. Ergluck had his own entirely unique style of dirt scraping. After a while, the seer approached. He appeared to be enjoying the milk fungus. So much the better, for Ergluck wanted the seer to be in as good a mood as possible when viewing Ergluck's work. The man did appear rather satisfied, smug even, looking quite pompous, in fact, with his arm around. Ergy, said Ayla, so beautiful and smiling.
Ayla, I'm glad you could make it.
I wouldn't miss it. Your paintings look so great in here.
Thank you. I've been working on them for so long. It's great to have people I want to see them. I mean, finally show them to people.
These are your works? Asked the seer.
Yes, said Ergluck.
He nervously started his prepared statement.
I've been working on...
Tell me what you were thinking with this one. The seer waved towards a series of antelopes surrounded by hunters.
I call it Hunt at Dawn. They're, hunting animals.
At dawn? Interesting. The seer leaned in and wrinkled his nose. How are we supposed to know that it's dawn?
I painted an orange circle for the big light that comes out in the morning and then hangs over us all day. See how it's low above the mountains there?
It could also be sunset, though, the seer pointed out.
It looks pretty, said Ayla.
Yes, but it has to do more than look pretty, the seer admonished.
Why?
She asked.
My dear, paintings have to draw in the spirits to accomplish a great hunt. They have to inspire us to live brave and free and show our value to the gods.
He looked at the paintings and frowned.
I'm not quite sure these accomplish that. Let's see some others.
They walked over to the next series of paintings. Ergluck followed. A small crowd gathered behind them as they walked, soon hanging on the seer's every word.
I kind of like how he makes things look, Ayla persisted. And that's what's charming about you, my darling, said the seer.
Ergluck swallowed as the seer walked to a series that he had just barely finished the night before. He almost hadn't done them
until he realized he simply needed more pieces to have a big enough show. This series depicted a group of hunters pursuing a herd of mammoths off a cliff, while the hunters had huge erections. "Ah," said the seer. "Intriguing." Ergluck realized that the entire cave had become quiet as everyone strained to hear the seer's pronouncements. "That's a bold choice," said the seer, leaning in. Ergluck felt a flash of relief.
"Yeah, I was going for the excitement of the hunt," he explained. "It really feels like a horny rut. You want the meat."
"Wow, I never thought of it like that," said Ayla. She turned her eyes towards Ergluck with new respect.
"But this is really nothing new," said the seer.
"What?" Ergluck sputtered. "I haven't seen it before. I came up with it myself."
The seer sniffed. "I saw Galukluk do the same thing in his installation at the Hill Valley Bear Clan, and their penises were over their heads."
"Yes," Flarg jumped in, "but that wasn't the artist's idea. They actually try to stretch their penises over their heads. They're not the brightest."
"Anyway, seer," Ergluck rallied, "what does it matter who has done what before or why? These are my paintings. What should matter is how they make us feel, how I felt when I made them, and the feelings they bring to others."
The seer noticed that Ayla's eyes were on Ergluck. He could see that this cave painter's arguments were winning her over, and scowled.
"You have not yet had enough winters to know this, so I shall instruct you. The point of art isn't to make people feel things. The point is to please the spirits so they help the hunt, and to appease the gods so we are not hunted."
"I don't agree," Ergluck responded.
The seer raised an eyebrow and chuckled indulgently. "Well, you're new to art, so I can see why you don't yet understand. But that's just pretentious bear shit, not unlike your paintings. You see," he began, and prepared to launch into a lengthy speech. Ergluck's new club smashed down on the seer's head, crushing his skull. All the visitors looked over at Ergluck, Ayla, and the fallen bloody body of the seer. The cave hung in silence for a second, and then it filled with polite applause. The excitement of the moment over, the crowd returned to the winemaker's rock. Ergluck's father caught his eye to nod approval before the old man reached for another piece of yak milk fungus with his wine. Ergluck turned towards Ayla and found he was enjoying the look in her eyes. He tried to seem less like a happy little boy. He decided to lean in. This was, in fact, the hunt.
"So, what are you doing later tonight?"
And the rest of the show was also a smashing success. 2015 AD. Exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum. An entirely new branch of cave paintings had been discovered in the famed caves of Lesseaux, France. Stunning was one academic assessment. Several careers were launched and would be maintained over decades on the study of this one set of works from an artist who lived before history began. The images were duplicated and sent on an international tour. They came to stop in an artificial cave known as the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where they attracted many viewers. "Of some anthropological interest, perhaps," said one established art critic, "but certainly nothing compared to the art of our modern times." Being a particularly well-known modern art critic, a sage of art even, he appraised the mood of the gathered crowd with an expert eye and continued, "It's too representational, too simple, too direct. There isn't even any subtext." "They look so primal, though," said one particularly pretty young woman to his left. The critic guessed she was a recent college graduate. He could humor her. "They do have a certain barbaric passion," he allowed. He did his best to smile sagely. "I do expect much better at a more modern show I'm reviewing tonight. One never knows, but there will be drinks at least. Perhaps you would be interested in accompanying me?" The girl considered it. "Well, this guy I know gave me a flyer for his show tonight. I was thinking I might go to that if you wanted to come along." He considered it. It sounded perfect. He would stand out in this crowd of lesser knowns and better his chances with her. What likelihood was it that the artist would actually be impressive and thus a rival? He chuckled indulgently. A nice small show? It's been a while. It sounds quite fun. The end. In just jumping right from art to sort of entertainment, but really the military entertainment complex, the alien species of the Cardassians, known to people who have been watching the documentary disguised as entertainment called Star Trek, have recently decided on a new way to destroy their enemies. They have started receiving a neurologically toxic episodic entertainment from Earth. The light radio waves going so slow have just finally reached one of their extended satellites. So you can expect Keeping Up with the Cardassians to start launching next week to soften up populations until they can accept dictatorial orders without question, as long as they're delivered with an appropriate fashion sense. On another note, there have been ongoing human rights demonstrations in the Zorgactron solar system. Literally, humans are protesting for their lack of rights. It is interesting that the robots still even have humans. Speculated that the humans may really just be some sorts of pets. It's an interesting thing to consider how humans could just sign over their autonomy to software. For more of that, check in with me later on Facebook. And I'll see you all next episode. Cheers.
Dare give me.